Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, September 21st, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by MacBreak Weekly. Want to know the real scoop on the world of Apple? Watch MacBreak Weekly with Leo, Alex, Andy, and friends every Tuesday at live.twit.tv. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Becky Worley.
Behind the boards are excellent producer Eric Lanigan.
Hey guys, how are you?
Doing good.
Hello.
Time for a little tech news. Are you ready for some tech news, Becky?
I think we should do some tech news.
I have some. I didn't know if you'd want it, but I just thought I'd be prepared and bring a little.
Go.
The U.S. government asked Google for user information 4,287 times during the first 6 months of 2010, according to a new tool Google has unleashed called the Transparency Report, where it allows you to look at what your local government, or any government in the world, doesn't have to be your local government, has been doing as far as making requests for Google to remove content.
Yeah, Google has made all of this information public. It's all of the requests from governments over the last 6 months, requests for data, presumably from Google services and from people's private accounts, and data removal. They didn't give any information about which of these requests were complied with, and they don't have any data about China. It's all divvied out by country. They don't have any data about China because China says this is a matter of state secrecy, and they have forbidden it, and apparently Google has complied.
The project was developed during that famous 20% time, if you must know. And a quick glance shows that U.S. and Brazil are racking up the most requests. As I mentioned, U.S. 4,287. Brazil far behind. They're not going to catch us. 2,435. Germany coming in third with 668. And Ars Technica points out this may be because Google is in the United States, so they're likely to get more requests. And they point out that Germany and Brazil have very strict defamation laws that pertain to online. So they're more likely to have requests for content to be removed. But if you play around with the tool, you can find out what kind of stuff. Was an ad word that was court ordered to be removed? Was it a blogger post? Was it a video from YouTube? And we're not talking about DMCA requests for takedown notices. These are coming from the governments of these regions.
Right. This isn't copyright, trademark issues, and this is also not child pornography. Google says that anytime they're notified or find any type of child porn, they automatically take it down. So they didn't include that in these requests. They said, this is a quote from their blog, "We counted requests for removal of all other types of content, and their examples they give are alleged defamation, hate speech, impersonation, and I think that, you know, a big one for them is on Blogger. They have all these different rules about hate speech not being allowed. So it's pretty complicated, but I think it is interesting that they feel it's important to have this level of transparency. And privacy advocates have said this is a good first step, but they wanted more information about how those requests were handled. And you also mentioned in the introduction, Tom, that this talks a little bit about traffic on the Google site and what is being regulated by countries. And this will replace the China, is it up, is it down monitor that Google previously had, right?
Right. So now you get a monitor for multiple regions, not just for China. And we should point out, China's there on all of these maps. It's just when you click through to get the results where you may or may not find information depending on whether the government allows it or not. Have you ever had that friend who left his partner or her partner and got together with somebody new, but they haven't quite worked it out with the old person, and it's kind of awkward for a while?
Messy breakup.
Yeah. Well, it's always such a relief when they all figure it out, and that's the way we feel about HP, Oracle, and Mark Hurd today.
Thank God.
Less than 2 weeks after suing Mark Hurd, Hewlett-Packard says the sides have put aside their differences, agreed that it really is, Mark is really better off with Oracle, and they understand, and it's all going to be okay. And as long as he doesn't
give us back our $15 million bucks,
as long as he doesn't take the $15 million in stock options, we'll just call it even.
Yeah, according to the SEC filing on Monday, Mark Hurd waived about half of the compensation that was owed to him. It's 330,000 some performance-based restricted stock units. These were given to him on January of 2008. 15,000 restricted stock units in 2009. And, you know, I just don't get this whole move here. I mean, $15 million, that's not that much money to a huge company like this to go out and make such a public. I don't know. It was kind of... It was half-assed, in my opinion. In some senses, they went after him, they sued him, but they didn't block his work at Oracle.
Well, they couldn't. Then, I mean, it would be really hard under California law to really block him. So they went over after the trade secrets thing, and I think what they really wanted to do was make a statement saying, this is not okay, companies. Don't think you can come and just take our people. We will put up a fight.
Okay.
And they also don't like the idea of giving Mark Hurd a bunch of stock in the company that he's now going to be competing with.
That was perhaps insult to injury. But this is the part that gets me. So HP's their chief financial officer and interim chief executive at HP says, HP and Oracle have been important partners for more than 20 years. We're committed to working together. We look forward to collaborating with Oracle in the future. And you have to keep in mind, about 40% of Oracle's business software runs on systems sold by HP. They have 140,000 customers in common. So this was never going to get knocked down, drag out. And I don't know why HP just didn't say, forget about it. Send Hurd on his way.
Yeah, they had the Open World Oracle's conference keynote last night, and co-president Safra Catz of Oracle, which is the other half of Mark Hurd, and HP executive vice president Ann Livermore reaffirmed their vows. I mean, the relationship between the two companies. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, there's too much at stake for these companies not to get along, but I think it was emotional for HP. They were like, you're going where? No. With her? Him? Whatever. Yeah.
It was just ugly. I'm glad we can all move on and have Thanksgiving together next year.
I know. Yes, it'll be a lovely Thanksgiving. I can't wait. Twitter worms took over the internet this morning. Everybody was freaking out. There were black screens showing up on people's Twitter pages, and nobody had any idea why. And it turned out there was a cross-site scripting bug in Twitter that one guy decided to take advantage of to make a point, and that led to lots of other people going, hey, I can do this too, and I can actually make Twitter retweet this to other people, and then it started cascading all around the net.
Yeah, it ended up in some rather embarrassing Twitter accounts. I think it was Gordon Brown's wife,
ex-prime minister's wife.
PM wife, yeah. Whatever. She had, fell victim to this. And this wasn't hard because here's how this worked. This was an XSS scripting vulnerability. And basically the way this worked is if you hovered over a link in Twitter, it would automatically basically take over. So I'm going to explain this as best I can. So what Twitter does is it takes those links and creates them into clickable hyperlinks. If that contains an at symbol, it converted part of the URL into JavaScript. And then that JavaScript could take over any of the features that were on the web page, the Twitter page that you were on at the moment, basically including the ability to send out tweets. And that's how thousands, tens of thousands of tweets were sent out automatically. And this is the first time this has happened, right? This happened last year, and Twitter thought they fixed it.
Yeah, it happened on their profile page last year, and they thought they had fixed it. Because It's like a bad message board where somebody can put a bold tag in and like bold the rest of the page. It's very simple message board behavior now to say, well, open tags are not allowed. We're going to close every tag in everybody's post so it doesn't mess everyone else up. Same thing here. Interpretable JavaScript should not be allowed. And in fact, Twitter posted just a little while ago saying they had patched this. They had forbidden JavaScript from being executed in someone's post. They had solved this vulnerability, but a new site update was rolled out, and they unknowingly unpatched it, and it resurfaced. So not too flattering, to put it mildly, to the Twitter coders that this happened, but they did get on it quickly this morning, and within an hour they had patched the vulnerability, and also kind of against the normal code to exploit this vulnerability in public on Twitter rather than to notify Twitter and give them a chance to fix it on their own.
Yeah. And did you mention, I may have been had a slight coma there. Did you mention that this was only on the old Twitter pages? It didn't happen on any of the new pages. So
well, it definitely was happening on the old pages. There were some people saying they were seeing it happen on the new pages as well. There were other reports saying, no, it wouldn't happen on the new pages. So I'm a little unclear still on that.
I think you could see it, but you wouldn't fall victim to it.
And nobody fell victim to anything malicious this time around. The most malicious it got was launching hardcore pornography pages, which you consider being somewhat victimized, but no data was stolen or anything like that.
Right.
So Twitter fixed it, but votes of confidence will not be coming fast and furious for them. You know what I'm saying?
The world came to a screeching halt when it all happened.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. What is Twitter doing? It's showing me something black. It's weird. That's when you close that browser page. That's what you do there.
And you could go over to Facebook then, Tom.
Yeah, where if you invite 15 friends, expect 21,000 to reply.
Whoops.
Yes. A Facebook faux pas performed by a teen, according to The Telegraph in London, decided to hold a birthday party, went on to Facebook. At least 21,000 people reportedly said they were coming before she realized she had invited the whole world, not just the 15 people that she wanted to.
Note to self, when you create an event page for 15 of your closest friends, make it private.
The police in the small town of Harpenden in the UK are reportedly going to have to guard her neighborhood on October 7th to make sure that some of those 21,000 people don't try to flood the neighborhood.
And you know, some of those RSVPs, okay, they might be from fake accounts, but these were some of the people that are supposedly attending. Mm-hmm. Justin Bieber, Stephen Hawking, and Susan Boyle. That is a party I want to go to.
She should just charge admission, you know, let the celebrities in, make everybody else pay a cover.
It's going to be the new Woodstock.
Turn this on its head, right? All right. Also in Facebook news today, they have added a not now feature. So if someone is asking to be your friend and you're just not sure and you'd rather not just have it sitting there staring you in the face on your page, you can press not now and it shuffles them off into a settings page buried in your settings. Not now also lets them continue to see your updates in their news feed without actually accepting them. So it acts sort of like an unofficial follow, like on Twitter, where you don't see their updates, but they see yours.
But only if those updates are public.
Yes, that's right. Only if you have set an update to go to everyone. So the kind of thing you'd find in a search engine.
Right. So if you have public updates and you haven't kind of locked down your privacy in that regard, what this actually does, it's sort of this accidental notification to someone that you're going to ignore their Facebook request. Because here's how this would work. So let's say Tom wants to be my friend on Facebook, and I just don't have the heart to say no and ignore him. I'm going to just say, not now. Well, in the interim, my public Facebook updates start showing up in his news feed. If I finally get the gumption to say, you know what, I really don't want to be friends with Tom Merritt, Ace Detect. Well, when I finally do ignore, make that go away and take it out of the not now pending file, well, then all of those status updates will disappear from the person's feed. And that tells them I just got negged. So it's just an awareness thing that doesn't necessarily take away the sting of not friending someone.
Well, actually, I think the not now button helps you to sidestep this problem, right? So I'm less than a year ago made my Facebook profile private. I only want people I know following me on Facebook. But I still get folks who just know me from, you know, watching podcasts or something, asking to be friends. So right now, I've got, I don't know, gosh, it's like 60 or 70 requests just sitting here that I haven't ignored. I haven't got rid of. If I were to get rid of them now, then they would know. Poor Jim Lunsford down in Texas would know, hey, Tom just kicked me off. I don't see his updates in my feed anymore. He's ignoring me. But instead, I can press not now. And that will allow him to continue to see my feeds, but I'm not adding him into my private Facebook. Fan pages are supposed to deal with this, though. So why give someone another avenue here? And most people aren't.
The takeaway from this is, if you have any issues about this, just keep your status updates private.
Well, yeah, I don't know why you need a not now.
Yeah.
Situation. Also, I'm looking at it. And I don't see an ignore. All I see is not now. which means that they get shuffled away into my settings before I can go and like say, absolutely not. I don't even want them seeing my updates if I really want to keep Facebook private. So again, none of these things is damning on its own, but it's too complicated.
Yeah,
it's like,
totally too
now I've got all these levels. There's status updates that can go to just people or my friends. There's status updates that can go to everyone in search engines. And then some of those people are going to see them because they're not nowed. But then if I don't want them to see it because they're not nowed, then it's just too much. Come on.
And who gets to see your location information, too? That's always the one that I'm freaked out by. Did you see that study that said only 2% of Facebook users are using location data?
Yeah, I don't think I want my location data in Facebook anymore. I'm going to turn off Facebook Places. I did tie my Foursquare into it, but there's just too many places that this can weasel its way out now. Again, don't trust Facebook, because when you think you've got it limited, you don't.
Mm-hmm. And didn't you go to that Italian place for dinner twice this weekend?
No. Did I check in twice?
I think so. I was like, dang, he really likes that restaurant. I know a lot.
I must have checked in twice. You're talking about Lococo's? Yeah.
I think so. It's just funny, right? Like all of a sudden I'm aware of what you're doing at that level. And it's like, oh, who knew?
And that's because of Facebook. You don't follow me on Foursquare, so.
No. Now, here's the question. If you were a teacher, would you let your students friend you or vice versa?
Well, sidestepping all of this crap. Right now, there's a whole different level there. Besides the privacy feature of having students knowing when you're out at the bar or whatever, is this an appropriate relationship between a student and a teacher? And I don't have an answer for this. This has been going on a lot. Cleveland is the most recent to say, no, teachers cannot friend students. But Florida, there was a Florida school back in August that did this. This has happened in a lot of different schools, both college and high school, where they've put in this policy. And it's a big debate in the educational community because there's a lot of benefits to this where you can communicate with the students and use social network the way business uses it to get out a message and help build a community. And all that stuff is great. But then there's the other side of it where the students are posting things that you shouldn't see, and then now that you've seen them, do you have a burden of reporting them to the school and possibly bringing disciplinary action, and vice versa? Are you relating to them on a level that students and teachers shouldn't relate on? And because social networking is used for socializing and dating, so it really gets muddy.
It's so muddy. And I mean, this news story that came down today that sparked this conversation about the Cleveland School Administration forbidding this, I think it does start a conversation. I think the simple solution is each classroom should have a Facebook page that's administered by the teacher. They have a professional profile. And I'll tell you what, if I was a teacher, I would be locking down my personal profile like you don't even know.
I think you're talking about a fan page, and that's perfectly appropriate. The class that you teach has a fan page. And it seems weird to call it a fan page, but it does what you need it to do, which it allows all the students to join it. And you can create that community and use all the good things of social networking, but you're not actually entering into the personal relationship that you would, unless you want to, in ways that are appropriate. But you're not bringing them into your entire life like you would be if you put them into your main profile.
I'm so glad this stuff was not around when I was in high school or college. That's all I can say. And cell phone cameras. Thank you, God.
That cell phone cameras weren't around back then?
I would be not doing this job. I don't know what I'd be doing. I'm thankful. Let me just put it that way. I keep referencing Thanksgiving. Thankful God there was no cell phone camera when I was in college.
You're planning for it, aren't you? It's on your mind. Outgoing Nokia CEO Anssi Vainio-Koivu says using Android is like peeing in your pants for warmth.
Okay, well, why
do we need to explain?
You talk about the technical implications, and I will try and do justice to this cultural reference that is apparently germane to the Nordic countries. Go ahead with the Android.
They were asking him, why isn't Nokia switching to Android? And he says, Google's software represents a short-term solution that will lead to bigger quandaries down the line. So I think he's alluding to possible patent problems or Google getting greedier about what you can and can't do if you want to use their licensed sections of Android. And he was illustrating the point to say using Android is like Finnish boys who pee in their pants for warmth in the winter. It's a short-term solution.
Is this rampant up north? I'm really wondering, but I can see how culturally perhaps that is a a misstep that a young boy who's cold would make and then his underwear freeze later.
Right.
I think the reference also is that Nokia loses its edge and it's the thing that differentiates itself. I mean, they spend something. I mean, they spend insane amounts of money on R&D and on making their operating system and their UI different. I think it's $1.3 billion a year on R&D. So they could stop spending that right now if they just took Android on. But then they lose their edge, their unique flavor in a world that's becoming really two mobile OSs. I mean, Windows Phone 7, yeah, bring it when you got it, and RIM declining. But, I mean, I think we're talking about an Android iOS war, and that the tertiary companies are really being faced with tough choices.
Also, Nokia shares tumbled on CEO Stephen Elop's first day, and he's probably looking at the outgoing CEO like, really? Peeing your pants on my first day? Really? Thanks a lot. They waited to announce the delay of the N8 until today, my first day, and the stock tumbles. This is the worst first day ever. Anyway, the touchscreen N8 is Nokia's big smartphone play to get back in the game and get in there with Android and iOS and BlackBerry. And they say they may push back shipment because of software glitches. So not an auspicious day for poor. Let's just take a moment for Stephen Elop. And say, you know what, tomorrow will be better.
Well, you know, eat a frog for breakfast and the rest of your day is going to be okay. So maybe that's another adage that we could add to the Nokia dilemma. His tenure could only get better. They did say they were going to ship these N8s in September. Now it's looking like the end of October. And, I mean, they have huge market share right now, but you have to feel like worldwide that will decline as we see rollouts of Android phones more in other countries. But, man, I think this N8 is going to make or break Nokia.
Stephen, if you're tempted to pee in your pants for warmth, don't do it. Wait
or
until
eat
tomorrow.
A frog.
Actually, this next story may cheer him up. iOS 4.x jailbreakers are under assault from malware. There is no official iPhone dev team or Chronic dev team release of a jailbreak, although they have announced that they were able to jailbreak at the boot ROM level so that it would be a permanent jailbreak no matter how many firmware updates come down the line. So everybody's excited about that, but they haven't released an actual jailbreak yet. So a lot of other folks have. If you look around, there's lots of them. Green Poison is one of the more popular ones. And what this is malware that will steal your phone numbers and your passwords. And sometimes they'll even charge you $40 for the privilege.
But do you think this is enough to get the average consumer who's just heard the word jailbroken and for the first time, this probably won't even cross the radar? I mean, these concepts are so far off.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. A lot of people want to poo-poo jailbreaking, but you'd be surprised how I've run into people that I thought would go nowhere near a jailbreak. They're like, oh, yeah, I'm using my iPhone on T-Mobile. You know, somebody pointed me to a link and I downloaded this and jailbroke my phone. Jailbreaking has awareness in the iPhone user community, and it's a dangerous awareness because people don't actually realize what they're doing. They don't have an understanding of it. They just know, oh, I run this program, and then my phone is able to do all these wonderful things. And that's what these malware writers are taking advantage of. Now, there is a beta of Red Snow, which can jailbreak iOS 4.1 on the iPhone 3G or second-gen iPod Touch only. So that further causes the confusion. But essentially, what you need to do is don't jailbreak your phone unless you're savvy enough to know exactly where that program came from and what it's doing to your phone.
Tom, Red Snow, right after the peeing in your pants, you know.
Well, yeah, there was yellow snow and now there's red snow. That is a traditional jailbreak naming convention.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to stick with my standard iOS and stay away from yellow, red, brown snow.
You don't have to stay away forever. Just hold off until a real thing comes.
Okay.
Consumers are responding positively to Microsoft Windows 7. This has got to warm Microsoft's heart. Satisfaction is rubbing off on their PCs, which is warming Acer and Dell's heart. Dell's satisfaction score was up 3 points over last year to 77, while HP, Acer, and the all others category was up 4 points, also to 77. The only manufacturer not to see gains was Compaq, which remained at 74 out of a possible 100. Apple remains on top with a score of 86.
This is all from the American Customer Satisfaction Index. And, you know, this halo effect from Windows 7 is the inference. We didn't see this with the previous version of the Microsoft OS, correct, Tom?
No, we did not. They say in this beta news article, nothing could have been made more evident of this issue than last year when netbooks, which were pre-installed with Windows XP, helped the all-other category to gain. And at the time, brisk sales of the devices had much to do with the jump. They also point out it might not entirely be Windows 7. There's also PC prices falling. And so when people pay less for stuff, they're happier with it. So the economy may have helped as well. But they think it's a combination of the economy and Windows 7.
Good on you, Microsoft.
Well done with the Windows 7. On to the news fuse. The U.S. got its first official 4G LTE phone today, Tuesday, for everyone who lives in Las Vegas. You're a winner! You get LTE. It's a prepaid phone, of course, because it's Metro PCS. No contract. Phone is the Samsung Craft, a $349 feature phone with a full web browser, QWERTY keyboard, Wi-Fi, and a touchscreen. Metro PCS plans to have LTE in 19 markets by the end of next year. That's 19 markets by the end of 2011 compared to Verizon's 30. And Sprint's like well ahead of that already. So they're behind, but if you're in Las Vegas, hey, you got LTE first. Congratulations.
Party. Panasonic claims to have the world's first interchangeable 3D lens. The $250 HFT012 is meant for bodies like the Panasonic Lumix DMC GH2. The lens is only meant for stills, not for video. Focal length is about 65 millimeters and at F12, this is for daylight third dimensions only.
Yeah,
I don't really want to see this come to video, though.
You're still 2D at night. Yeah, James Cameron would like that, too. AT&T announced they will launch a dual-mode GSM satellite phone called TerraStar Genus. It will run Windows Mobile 6.5 and provide coverage in the U.S., Puerto Rico, U.S. Virgin Islands, and territorial waters. The big selling point is the ability to use satellite for coverage in remote locations, especially useful for rescue workers. It appears to be the successor to Iridium, if you remember that. It'll set you back $799, plus you have to pay for a plan and a separate plan for the satellite, but no need for a contract.
Hey, and it goes with your boat. Come on.
I'm on a boat.
Mm-hmm. NVIDIA today provided a brief glimpse into its future graphics architecture, Kepler. The design will replace the Fermi core of today's GeForce 400 series and should calculate about 5 gigaflops per watt, or more than 3 times the 1.5 gigaflops of the Fermi hardware.
3 times? Oh my God.
I know you're excited. Both the redesign as well as a shrink in the assembly process from 40 nanometers to 28 should reduce the need for extra cooling and power in notebooks and other hardware in tight spaces, Tom.
Foursquare has added a new feature that's very similar to Facebook's like button. It appears on third-party sites. The add to Foursquare button would allow review sites and owners of businesses to build Foursquare compatibility right into their very own websites and let users embed Foursquare info right into reviews. So helping the people check in and becoming mayor.
If you recall the BlackBerry issues in the United Arab Emirates and in Saudi Arabia, where the governments wanted access to some RIM data for security purposes, well, now it appears that India has access to BlackBerry Messenger and is about to get access to email. Reuters is reporting that India has threatened a partial ban on RIM if they don't comply. Indian government officials say they are weighing up all the possible options, and RIM has declined comment.
A new study from Newcastle University about online shopping says it's not as green as it once may have been touted to be. Study reports you have to buy at least 25 items to make the purchase and delivery negate the emissions from a trip to the mall. This contradicts a 2009 study that said online purchases did reduce emissions. I, for one, am confused and plan to continue having my shampoo and Becky's kids' diapers delivered to her front door.
Well, maybe I should have read that one, Tom. Apologies. Are you buying my kids' diapers now?
You didn't know? That's where they've been coming from.
Thank you, Jesus.
I know how expensive it is.
I'll be able to get that second mortgage paid off now.
The meat, too.
Yeah, he'll be here any minute. Gmail is now an app in the Android marketplace with Priority Inbox, a show quoted text button, and a floating message actions toolbar. It's all similar to the browser-based mobile cousin, but as an app store, the Gmail app can be updated more frequently, and the operating system will be able to add more features more often, and that's a good thing. But keep in mind, you do have to have Android 2.2 to run the app.
Speaking of apps, there's a new one in the App Store today that's going to help some guy who got stoned and looked, well, he says he didn't get stoned, but he acted stoned and looked at his double rainbows. You know the double rainbow meme, right?
Double rainbow all across the sky.
We figured out. We figured out what it means, Becky.
99 cents per sale?
Yes. It means App Store magic. It's the double rainbow app, and all you have to do is put two rainbows on a screen and take a picture, and then it saves a picture to your photo gallery that has two rainbows superimposed over the top of it. It doesn't even allow you to get to the gallery from within the app.
Listen, it's good for 99 cents worth of fun in a bar. That's all I can say.
I'd say don't waste your 99 cents on this. Just enjoy the double rainbow. It's not about money. This is the pot of gold at the end of the double rainbow? I think not.
I think this is the new way to cash in on, if you're the meme of the week, you got to get an app developer on it ASAP, and that way you can at least get a little bit of coin back for your infamy.
It puts a little effect, a little halo effect. I took a picture earlier of Ken and Eric, and they look sort of like they're in some sort of bad Willy Wonka dream.
Now, you remember that the double rainbow guy, he basically did an ad for Windows, for Microsoft, their Windows Live project.
He's doing fine. He didn't need this app, but hey, why not? Good on
him. He's a mountain man anyways. What does he need money for?
For the camera that he's going to use to film the next triple rainbow.
Apparently.
All right, let's move on to the calendar. We got some Android releases to talk about.
Yeah, Android 2.2 for Droid X is going to be released Wednesday at noon Eastern time. And aside from all of the 2.2 upgrade goodness, Verizon says you're going to get visual voicemail with Bluetooth support, refreshed mobile hotspot app, and a fix to prevent data connections from dropping as you move between Wi-Fi and 3G coverage. So if you're a Droid X owner, anticipate that coming down the pike. Samsung says their Galaxy S update is going to come late October for Spain. And the issue here is, will this be the rollout for all the European countries, or is it just Spain? But anticipate that one also being in the pipeline. And this story, I was checking my Twitter updates this morning, despite the terrible takedown of Twitter.
You were risking it?
I was risking it because I had to get my Lance Armstrong news. I follow Lance. And he was going on a ride around San Francisco with, I guess, high-ranking customers of Oracle who are at the Oracle World conference here in San Francisco.
And a bunch of bike messengers, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I don't think it was a bunch of guys with, one pant leg rolled up and a bag across
their... Well, what are you going to do? You're going to have guards to keep them away? They're probably, like, you know, getting upset and whipping past him.
True,
like, come on,
true.
We have stuff to deliver.
All of the soft sort of Oracle customers who were, you know, out there like, dude, I'm biking with Lance, got taken over by the bike messenger takedown.
Now, I'm sure they had a police escort to keep the messengers away.
That's pretty cool. And finally, the Zune is going to finally make its international debut this fall. The company says Zune software and related services, including Zune Marketplace, online store, and Zune Music Pass subscription service, will debut in Europe this fall. And for now, though, Microsoft will not sell the Zune Music Player abroad.
On to the email to TNT@twit.tv. Samuel says, in your last episode, you talked about Intel limiting chips, and one of you compared it to a car manufacturer limiting the engine. Well, Volkswagen does this. When you buy an Audi, they have the same parent company, you get a motor in it that gives it full maximum power. However, when you buy a Skoda, you get the same motor, but because of another chip in the computer of the car, the motor only delivers about 15 PK less. PK is Dutch for horsepower. Pardon me for mispronouncing that. So 15 horsepower less because of a computer chip. So there you go. Anything you think is too ridiculous to happen, happens. That's what I've learned.
This story about Intel and the chips being sort of downgraded generated a ton of email. This one from Matt in Cleveland, and he says, insert obligatory love the show. I've watched every episode. Keep up the great work statement here. But he does say, I just finished watching episode 78 where you discussed the downgraded Intel chips. While this does seem unfair, IBM is doing it for a very long time. Their Enterprise Class Z series mainframes have very powerful chips, and they only activate the parts that you're willing to pay for. They treat it more like software. software licensing than hardware purchasing. Again, this is from Matt in Cleveland. And I actually see a benefit to this in the enterprise world, which is it creates a scalable scenario. So if you think your business is going to grow, you can buy one piece of hardware and then scale it up as you go without having to reinvest all the way through. So in some senses, you could perceive this as a service.
From a certain point of view, you could say, oh, it's like having the DVD that Windows sells with all the versions of Windows on it. But if you only pay for the home edition and you want to upgrade to the home premium edition, you just pay for an unlock code and it's all there on the DVD. Where it breaks down, this is what we talked about yesterday, and this is the problem I have with it, is I have bought this thing and now I can't do something with it. So I don't really own it. And it's this is not a new problem in the digital age, but this idea of, well, wait a minute, you bought that chair, but we could actually make it comfier. There's an extra cushion in there that's deflated, but we only let you inflate it if you pay us. It's like, well, I got the chair. If I can figure out how to inflate it, or if I just want to put an extra cushion, do I have to pay extra for that? And it's the same thing with these firmware. If you can figure out how to unlock it, or if you can figure out how to decrypt the code, you own it, or do you? You don't.
This is the differential between a thing and a service. So if you own it, it feels wrong. If you have it physically, it feels wrong. But if it's a service, it doesn't feel wrong at all. And I can't believe this is the first analogy that came to my mind. But if you go to a strip club and you're sitting there, you pay your money to get in and you're watching what's happening up on the stage, that's one thing. You paid, you watch. Now, all at the same time, you know that it's totally possible that that dancer could come right down off the stage and you could give her some more money and you got your lap dance. That doesn't offend your sensibilities. Well, the analogy might, but the differential between the service and the personalization, you don't
own the dancer. You own the chip.
Yes, but that's the point. It's a service.
But it's not. It's a chip. It's my computer that I own. Right? It's the idea of like, well, we think we can lock something down and get away with it because we don't think you're able to do it, right? It goes back to my chair analogy, which is you wouldn't do that because you know people are able to figure this out. And so you're not going to be able to get away with it. The only reason that they do it is they think it's too hard for people to do. Where it becomes a problem is whether it's legal or illegal to do something to something that you own unless you don't own it, in which case that's fine. Yeah, if I rent a house, I can, there's certain things I can't do to it. I understand that because I'm renting it. I don't own it. But don't give me, sell me a chip that I own, except I don't really. It's this gray area that gets really complicated.
This is the difference between you and me. We'll have to agree to disagree. You see your CPU as a chair and I see your CPU as a stripper.
It's also why I don't go to strip clubs.
Great.
TNT crew.
Me too.
Dave,
oh, I was supposed to say that.
Dave says, I think you are missing the point of a Facebook phone. It is probably not about voice, but data. Think about it. A cheap Farmville tablet or a mobile Mafia Wars device to feed your online addiction. If they make it cheap, like a low-function iPad or ebook reader type of device, they can make money on exclusive content, mobile data plans, and adding new applications. Services, like we're just talking about, right? If they add WiMAX or LTE into it, they may have the chance to leapfrog the competition. Remember the people who spend something like $25,000 on Farmville.
I think this is a really good point about what may be sort of a separate tack on what Facebook is working on. It's not an all-in-one phone that's going to try and compete with other smartphones and have a flavor or a brand on it that's Facebook branded. It could be something more like the Peek email device, P-E-E-K. I don't know if you've heard about this much.
It was number one on my top five worst products of 2009 list, the Twitter Peek.
It's just a device that doesn't. It's a mobile connected device that uses cellular data networks, but you just do email on it, or you. It's just one that's branded for Twitter. So there could be something like that that's just Facebook.
If it was that, it would fail. Just like the Twitter Peek has been ridiculous, and I don't see that. But I think there is something in here that we could use, right? Which is the idea of a Facebook limit, like a feature phone, right? And that's kind of what we were talking about before.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It'll fail miserably, but Facebook has lots of money, and they have to figure out something unique to do with it and keep their little brains buzzing and not think about the movie that's coming out.
Yeah, you're right. Dave's just thinking out of the box here. It's a good idea. Facebook should actually hire him. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening or watching. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us TNT@twit.tv. If you want a video voicemail played, upload it to a site and send us a link. We don't like opening the attachments. That's TNT@twit.tv. That's our email address. Or just give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. I'll see you tomorrow, Becky.
Yep, you got it, bud.